Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Kavazra, and for today, we are getting into some of the economics news of the week, as we do on a Friday. And for today, it's an interesting one because we are looking at what's going on in the employment equity space, and you know, a little bit just around what's also going on in the BEE space. Because Parliament's Portfolio Committee on Employment and Labour has actually called for public comment on the Employment Equity Amendment Bill. The bill actually promises a shake-up of the country's existing employment equity laws, giving the Minister of Employment and Labour the power to speed up transformation in specific sectors. It's doing this in a number of ways, but it empowers the Minister to set sector-specific employment equity targets across most of South Africa's major industry, but there are, you know, businesses opposing this, saying that it might have the opposite effect and will indeed retard growth and employment. Now, to, you know, help us to unpack these issues and, you know, maybe, you know, tell us what's real and not real, we are joined by Lauren Salt, who is an executive in the employment department at law firm ENS Africa. Lauren, greetings to you.
Greetings, Mudiwa. Thank you for having me.
I think, you know, a good place for us to start, you know, I've just given a little bit of background, at least, you know, some rudimentary background. Is this the end of employment equity as we know it? Or, you know, how significant is this move?
This is fairly significant. This bill that we are seeing now that has gone out for comment has been around since about 2018, and it's made its way through the various measures in terms of getting comment on the bill, and now it's come out again for comment in very much the same form as we saw it in 2018. And the messaging from the Department of Employment and Labour then, as it is now, is that there hasn't been significant or enough progress in terms of employment equity. And really what we've seen from the promulgation of the Employment Equity Act and the affirmative action provisions until now has been very slow progress, because it seems to me at least that employers have approached employment equity as more of a tick box exercise than meeting the substantive elements which underpin affirmative action. So what we're looking at the moment is the Department of Employment and Labour's attempt to try and get faster movement on meeting numerical goals and targets that people put into their employment equity reports on an annual basis.
And then when it comes to, you know, all of that, there are a number of terms that I feel, you know, before we actually get into, you know, the meat and potatoes of the discussion, people tend to conflate or think about these things interchangeably when we talk about employment equity, when we talk about BEE, when we talk about affirmative action. How do we draw the lines between these various concepts and, I guess, how they are handled on a legislative level?
So maybe I can start with employment equity. So when we talk about employment equity and affirmative action that will be used interchangeably, we are looking at the workforce of a company. So the aim of the employment equity and affirmative action provisions is to create a mini South Africa in each and every workforce, and when I talk about workforce, it's the workforce of a designated employer who is required to report. When we talk about BEE, though, we are looking at the organization in its broad terms. So we're looking at ownership. We're also looking at employment equity, which factors into that. We're looking at suppliers and we're looking at enterprise development. Those are certain of the elements, and not all of them, that we look at from a BEE perspective. So whilst there is an interplay between employment equity and BEE, they're not used interchangeably as terms. They're completely separate concepts, although employment equity does plug in as one of the pieces of the BE puzzle when you are being evaluated and you're undergoing your verification exercise as an enterprise.
So is it correct to say then that if the proposed changes are made to the bill and then it is signed into law, that as a piece of the broader BEE framework, that this would have an impact on BEE as a whole?
Well, it depends. Currently, what the verification agents look at from an employment equity perspective is whether or not you've submitted your employment equity report and you've got back verification from the Department of Employment and Labour that you have, in fact, complied. The proposed amendments, and I'm not sure how these are going to feed through into the BEE space, the proposed amendments have more of a focus on actual substance compliance, so substantive compliance in respect of whether you've met your goals and targets, which will feed into these sector-specific goals and targets. So we might see the BEE space looking further into whether there is substantive compliance with the employment equity provisions, as opposed to just this tick box exercise of submitting your employment equity report, which may reflect not very much change in achieving your numerical goals and targets.
So from a practical point of view, if I'm a business or an employer of some sort and, you know, reading these proposed changes, how is it likely to affect, you know, someone in that position, you know, going forward? Like, what are some of the practical implications?
So assuming that you're a designated employer, and that is currently, and this is where another change comes in Mudiwa, is if you're a designated employer, if you meet certain thresholds, so either if you've got 50 or more employees, or you've got an annual turnover in line with those that are attached to the Employment Equity Act, if you exceed that, then you are a designated employer and you have to comply with the Act. So assuming that you are a designated employer and you are required to have, amongst other things, an employment equity plan, and on an annual basis you're required to report, businesses are going to need to look more closely at how they are achieving their goals, whether they are achieving their goals on an annual basis, and whether their progress is sufficient. Now, I've already mentioned that the affirmative action provisions are designed to try and create a mini society in the workplace. Now, I'm sure that when we receive these sector-specific targets, it won't be very much different, but there will be more latitude from the Department of Employment and Equity to say that you are or you aren't complying, because they will have that those numbers on hand as to what each sector looks like and should look like from an employment equity or an affirmative action perspective. So at the moment, where employers are sort of, for lack of a better word, thumb-sucking what their numerical goals and targets are and potentially not achieving those, in future they will have very definite targets that they will have to meet because they will be expressly set out in the Act. Now, there'll be no hiding for designated employers, I presume, who do not then meet those targets, or at least show that they are making strides and positive strides and immediate strides to try and achieve those targets. I mean, I think, you know, an employer is going to be hard-pressed to try and excuse away why they can't meet those targets as they have in the past.
You know, as you're talking, it really does sound as if the proposed changes, you know, would, I guess, serve in the interests of, you know, the broader economic agenda of transformation in South Africa. So what are the reasons against it? Because I think, you know, with anything, there's always opposition. And especially with something that's going to affect so many businesses, those that are against this, what are they saying?
Well, I mean, I think it is going to place a lot of pressure on businesses to try and achieve those targets. And, you know, I think there might be justifiable reasons where employers can't meet those targets, but I think there'll be a lot more focus on why employers can't meet it. So as soon as there are specific sector targets that they're going to have to meet. I think everybody's going to throw their hands up and say, look, we can't meet that. And they're going to need to be able to say, these are the reasons why. Now, I don't think that this is reason to panic. I think that there is probably a lot of value in putting in place these sector-specific targets. And I don't think they're insurmountable where there's justifiable reasons. So, for instance, if you do have a vacancy and your target suggests that you should appoint an Indian female in that role, and you go through however many candidates and you just can't find an Indian female who is suitable to go into that role, you won't be taken out at dawn and shot by the Department of Employment and Labor for not being able to find that Indian female to put in that role. You'll be able to say, I have in fact got all of this information to back up what I have done from a recruitment perspective in order to source a suitably qualified candidate for that position. I haven't been able to. However, I will continue to try and further my workforce in line with the set numerical targets.
That really does sound like a lot of admin that is going to have to be taken on the side of employers proving their reasons for or against their ability or inability to get certain candidates or to meet those sector specific goals. So am I correct in assuming, or at least understanding from what you're saying, that this is something that is likely to affect more of the large corporates as opposed to small businesses?
Yes, it's more likely to affect large corporates because I think on balance, there's far more larger corporations who are designated employers who meet those thresholds for reporting. And just to revisit, Mudiwa, your comment on how this sounds like a lot of admin. You know, compliance as a general rule is a lot of admin, but employers should already be keeping this sort of information for the purposes of any compliance audits for the Department of Employment and Labor. You know, currently, I don't think it's going to be looked at as closely as it will in future, but that information should already be to hand if the Department of Employment and Labor turn up.
And from your work, because you are in this space, is this an issue that businesses are actually looking at and worried about, at least from a corporate point of view? Because as you said, this has been on the table since 2018, and it's still a bill for now, which means it hasn't yet been enacted into law. So at the moment, are businesses actually, worried or concerned about this becoming law?
So there was definite mass panic in 2018, Mudiwa, and it seemed to have dissipated where the bill kind of fell out into the system again. And now that it's returned, I anticipate that this will be a worry again for business. I think, they may not be the same kind of panic because they may have been sensitized to it in 2018, but these changes are definitely coming. And I think it is something that will worry certain businesses, specifically because we do not have any idea what each of the sector-specific targets and goals will look like. So, people are always concerned about the unknown. You know, we might be pleasantly surprised and the sector targets are extremely achievable for a lot of designated employers. But I guess time will tell. I think the panic will probably be seen between now and the 19th of February when the public comment needs to be in. And just how much panic there will be dictated by how many submissions are made on these sector-specific targets.
As you were saying that, one can't help but to think about that balance, because you said something that, is quite interesting, where you said these changes, are likely to come. And one has to then wonder, how much of a sway or influence do the public comments have? Because if, for example, public comment ends up with a bunch of corporates saying, no, this is not something that needs to be done. The implementation and actual, effecting of these rules is going to impede our ability to do business, all of these things. If that's the overwhelming opinion, I'm guessing that lawmakers still have that ability to perhaps overlook and do what's in the, best interests of, the country's stated goals of employment equity.
Yeah, and I definitely do think these changes will come. I mean, whether they will be in amended form or not is something that I don't know. But I do think that there's a definite argument from the legislature's perspective to say this is no different than the scenario that we currently sit in, where you as employers are required to set your own goals and targets against the economically active population. And so again, I revisit the statement that what this is seeking to achieve and what your targets should look like is a mini representation of society in your business. Now, I think that employers currently are not doing that, and this is just a greater mechanism to allow the Department of Employment and Labour to enforce what employers should have already have been doing. So, I mean, I think there's definite argument to be made from the legislature's perspective to say, well, really, what's the harm? These are already in place and you should be aiming to achieve them. And now if you can't achieve them, you need to then explain why you can't achieve them. So, and you should have already been doing that work already as a designated employer.
So, Lauren, as we come to the tail end of this discussion, we, perhaps could zoom out a little bit to look at the broader employment equity space. You are, working on these issues on a day-to-day basis, just employment and labor law, as a whole. So, from your perspective, what do you think of the progress, that's actually been made when it comes to, employment equity in South Africa?
I think progress has been slow, and I think the worry of the legislature is not unfounded. And I think going forward and the implementation of laws such as the sector-specific targets is definitely going to work to increase compliance with the Employment Equity Act and numerical goals and targets. And I think that we're probably going to see going forward increased compliance audits, increased inspections, not only in respect of employment equity, but the labor legislation as a whole. So I think that employers should start to take employment equity a little bit more seriously. As I've mentioned before, it seems to have been in the past a bit of a tick box exercise, crunch some numbers, sign some forms, and submit it online once a year. I think employers need to start looking more closely at what they are doing in order to achieve those goals and targets already, and I think they should do this in anticipation of any amendments coming in, so that once the amendments do come in, they're in a better position. But I do think that employers need to take things a little bit more seriously now.
So that's been it. We're talking to Lauren Salt, who is an executive in the employment department at ENS Africa, giving us some insight into some of the proposed amendments to the Employment Equity Amendment Bill, which is coming under public comment, very soon. Talking about some of the arguments for and against the proposed amendments, and also just getting into a little bit around the progress that has been made or not been made. She's actually saying that in the past it has suffered what many other pieces of legislation suffer, where people sort of comply on a tick box level, but going forward, this is likely to be something that actually lights a fire under some of the businesses, just so that we can take these issues more seriously. Lauren, as a last point, how do people, find out more information for those that maybe, are listening to this and are like, wow, I didn't even know that this was going on. How can they actually keep themselves abreast?
There will be a number of articles published, I'm sure, in the press as well as on a website such as our own ensafrica.com, and people out there can definitely stay abreast that way. If people feel that they are wanting to comment, I would strongly suggest that they look at this more seriously because the deadline is approaching at nine on 19 February 2021.
All right. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. As you heard, those are the ways in which you can go and keep yourself abreast. If you're a business owner or if you're an executive in a company and this might be something that you see as, potentially affecting your business, go and educate yourself.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
A very fascinating and necessary discussion there with Lauren from ENS Africa. Employment equity, I think, one of the things I appreciated the most was that distinction between employment equity and, BEE, where it fits into the landscape, because sometimes it's especially in the day-to-day, I think as lawyers, they completely understand where the lines are drawn, the differences, the separation, etc. But on a day-to-day basis, as ordinary people, we tend to look at a lot of these things as just, oh, this is all BEE. You know what I'm saying? So from that point of view, really appreciated getting an understanding of the difference and where employment equity actually fits in on the BEE spectrum. The other one is just thinking about some of the sector-specific goals and how they're going to go about, firstly, how they're going to come up with the targets for each sector, and then secondly, how they're going to implement them. And I guess more importantly, because as we were talking earlier on, you heard that for a lot of employers, there had been a bit of a tick box exercise sort of mentality where people just do something for the sake of compliance and to just say that, okay, we're doing what the law says, here you go. But from that point of view, implementation, but more importantly, how it's going to be enforced is going to be the most important thing. What type of teeth is this act going to have once the amendments are made? What are going to be the consequences for businesses that don't comply, organizations that don't meet their targets, and what happens in those sectors? I like the example of the Indian woman to fill a specific role that she gave, because that is a practical example. In certain sectors, in certain industries, let's say, for example, the sector-specific rule for data scientists is that we must have, let's say, the composition should be 15%, female Indian in terms of data science, in the data science industry. But if, let's say, there's two companies in the whole sector that literally have all the Indian female professionals in them, what happens to the rest of the sector, the rest of the companies? How do they argue? And if they can't find anyone to meet, those targets, how does the government then go and try to help those situations? We wait and see, but, it's going to be one of those things that has big implications on businesses, how they run and how they set their targets into the future. That's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your podcasted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gabaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.